Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, that is my ramble for this evening, folks.
And we appreciate you being a rambling man, Martin. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for that disclaimer. Joining us this evening is the point of the spear, or bayonet, depending on what you're using. At this moment, we're going to be introducing Brother John, who will be sharing with us some intriguing information regarding the classic case of where do you stand? In other words, do you stand with as someone with civil rights, or do you stand as someone with constitutional rights? And frankly, if you study, you can be both. And having both is allowing you to enjoy not only rights, but privileges. Although for myself, I prefer just to stay with the constitutional rights and leave those privileges to people who are actually defined in law as slaves, or serfs, if you prefer. Some people are sensitive to the term slave. So tonight we have a gentleman that is going to be sharing with you tonight how important these definitions are and how it applies to your situation or may apply to your situation, and also share specifically how it will affect or does affect a certain Mr. T. And when he brings up Mr. T, we're going to go in through another saga of As the Stomach Turns. So without further ado, it's our pleasure to turn this call over to our shining star, Brother John. If he unmutes his phone.
Well, thank you, Michael and Martin. I pulled a Michael Edwards here. I was actually talking and I was muted. I guess that's the first time I've done that. I don't know how I did that. Thank you, Martin and Michael, for your kind and gracious introduction. Referring to the Legal Information Institute, the definition of the term national. The term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. When you're an American national, in that this juncture, and as we talked about last week, Mr. Edwards brought out the some of the definitions that were and some of the verbiage and the particulars that were brought out in the transaction in the Enablement Act for the investor of the 49th state into the Union, Alaska. When we're looking at 8 U.S.C. 1502, it's very important that we understand that the definition of an American national is not the same as definition as United States citizen. To that end, right off the bat, I would like anybody who's, shall we say, had a moment to do any search or research on 8 U.S.C. 1502 this week, could you please raise your hand on the phone there? And Michael or Martin, would you let us know who raises their hands, okay?
Sure. Just press star that. 2 on your key. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. If you have done the research that they talked about, John talked about last week regarding the study of 1502, right? Press star 2 on your keypad.
Yeah, if anybody dialed the phone number we gave you, I'd like to hear and find out about your experiences on dialing that phone number, okay? So to that end, anybody would like to share what they've learned, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah. Nobody's raised their hand yet, John.
Okay. Quick perusal on 18 U.S.C. 1502. It's a certificate of nationality issued by the Secretary of State for persons not naturalized citizen of the United States for use of proceedings in a foreign state. And as we learned last week from Michael Edwards, all 48 previous states were considered foreign governments or foreign states to Alaska. Then the statute reads, the Secretary of State is authorized to issue in his discretion and in his accordance with the rules and regulations prescribed by him a certificate of nationality for any person not a naturalized citizen in the United States who presents satisfactory evidence that he is an American national and that such certificate is needed for use in judicial or administrative proceedings in a foreign state, okay? And such certificate, such certificate shall be solely for the use in the case for which it was issued and shall be transmitted by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial or the administrative officers and of the foreign state in which it is to be used. Okay, now, the definition of foreign state as it comes through is the term foreign state includes outlying possessions of a foreign state, but self-governing dominions or territories under mandate or trusteeship shall be regarded as a separate foreign states. Okay. The issue here is that when you have rights as a national and that you owe allegiance to a specific state and a judiciary is in the process of depriving you of those rights because he said, out of ignorance, but because he says, I've never heard of any such thing, and what laws I've looked up don't have or apply to, and anything that was already that related to that was everything was overruled, and I have a case where an attorney told, in this case, Mr. T, the cases I found were all dismissed. They were American citizen, American sovereign, American national citizen. And 8 U.S.C. says maritime sovereign citizen. The judge is not going to permit these. That defense is not going to happen. What's happening is that the public pretender that was assigned to Mr. T and judge himself, none of them have a clue about what an American national is. And we have definitions that date back over 100 years that are given to us in rulings and opinions by SCOTUS. And so what happens is that they have no clue what an American national is. So it's clear that to win an argument, you have to be arguing something in controversy. You have to be able to know what you're speaking in controversy to and what the controversy is. So to that end, you have to understand both sides of the arguments to get a just decision. If the party that you're arguing the decision in front of does not understand clearly and succinctly both sides of the argument, you are never, ever, ever going to get justice or an answer through all of that. It's brutally important that to that end, an individual understands that when we're not using the term sovereign citizen or any of those terms have been long since overused and subsequently considered abused. I've listened to people. There was a time when I listened to people 35, 40 years ago talk about sovereign citizen, and the judge took notice and respect. And too many other individuals, without knowing what they were talking about, would later bring up the same terms because, well, if he got traction in a court case on it, well, I'll throw that term around and I'll get traction. Well, they didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't know the rights or the responsibilities of a sovereign. And to that end, they got ruled against. And to that, and because somebody was unskillfully playing with a very, very large edged weapon, and they accidentally cut their feet off. And there's something called res judicata, meaning it's already been ruled on, or it's previously ruled on. And what happens is that most judges now, and attorneys, and in this case the public defender, without looking at the merits of the concept of the term, they just look it up on LexisNexis or any one of their Westlaw or other searching, and they find similar terms, and that individuals with unskillful jurisprudence wielded the sword unskillfully and got ruled against them. And to them, because the general term that was used was, you know, in this case, this one person pulled up American citizen, American sovereign, American national citizen. You know, pull up terms like that rather than American national. He looked up everything that he could find except American national. And most of it, while these terms were very, very good when they were used originally, now individuals without skill, tossing them around callously and insensitively, and I'm sorry to use that terminology, but I am, now made the words worthless. And so to get back to the place where someone will say, ask the justice to, or the gavel or the gown to look at the merits of the term, all they say is, look, it's been ruled on this many times, that many times, and it's always been this way. Well, Your Honor, this argument was not presented there. I've looked at those. I'm sorry. It's already been ruled, and I'm going to overrule your objection. That's end of story. And that's how it's going to go. So what happens is that in oral arguments, you're going to find that they're going to immediately sway toward the rulings that have been made previously that constitute the term res judicata. And nowadays, courts' staff have been allowed what's called a law clerk or one or more law clerks. And some of these law clerks sit right there in the courtroom. And instead of a court clerk or a secretary, only two positions, sometimes you see three or four now on the left side of the judge's bench. And one of those people is constantly, you know, you may find out, is constantly looking up every term that you throw out there and every case you refer to verify the veracity of its integrity, and sending it up to the monitor, the screen that's flat on the judge's podium there, so that he can look at it. In some cases, many of these judges now have printers on their podium. And what happens is that without you ever realizing it, they send a print to the judge's printer and it's out in paper right in front of them while you're talking to them. So at this juncture, being prepared to make a brief in support of your documentation, meaning that it has the case law that did rule in that favor, and it has the origin or the genera from where which the word was taken and what it actually means, and not what the courts have come to believe or the unskillful individuals that are pleading the case or adjudicating the case have come to believe it is. So it's extremely important that when we talk about American nationals, there are some people out there, coincidentally, most of them with the State Department, that know what an American national is. And it's not third branch of our government, the judiciary, appears to be somewhat devoid of any understanding of the term American national. So what's happening is that right now, for those of you who are involved currently with cases where your American national status applies, there are some that, you know, we've helped write briefs and write pleadings, and they got their case dismissed instantaneously. And I do mean instantaneous. Well, as close as instantaneous as you could come, before they were made to appear to plead, before they were arraigned, the case was dismissed. Okay? And that's the way we like to do it. And, and an attorney that can, and I'm not condoning attorneys at all. I'd like for all of you to understand the difference between right now the term assistance of counsel and and what happens is that American Bar Association, and this is where Mr. T comes today and Mr. T in the morning will be arguing before a judge who's refused to grant him the Sixth Amendment counsel. And all of you, most of you know the difference between the Sixth Amendment counsel and what the law is. And in the Constitution, it makes it very, very clear the Sixth Amendment is. And the last sentence of the Sixth Amendment, it says, and to be informed the nature of a cause or accusation and be confronted with witnesses against him, have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, at this juncture, the Sixth Amendment was penned and ratified before December 15th, 1791. And it gives the citizen a series of certain rights in criminal trials. Now, some people, we've had a judge that says, you're required to be represented, and the judge used that very specifically, through the public defender, and the public defender used those words exactly. He says, I'm sorry, you're only allowed to be represented by a board-certified attorney, okay, and a member of the bar in good standing. And he literally quoted the judge, and except that if you go to the ABA website, Bar Association, it says it was founded on August 21st, 1878. That's August 21st, 1878. That's 87 years after the Sixth Amendment was penned and ratified. Okay, so if somebody says you can only have a attorney, Your Honor, I would like my constitutional right. Well, that's what the Constitution is. And we've had these gentlemen both lie and say, I'm sorry, you're not saying what the Constitution says. You were lying. They said you're only allowed to be represented by a board-certified member of the bar in good standing, a current member. And so when on December 15th, 1791, when the Sixth Amendment was penned and ratified, the American Bar Association shows up not in 1791, close to that, but in 1878, 87 years before the Bar Association was even established. And they, the American Bar Association is proud of parading that they were founded on August 21st, 1878, in Saratoga Springs, New York, by 75 lawyers from 20 states and the District of Columbia. And according to the ABA website, the legal profession as we know it, quote unquote, the legal profession as we know it today barely existed at that time. Lawyers were generally sole practitioners who trained under a system of apprenticeship. This is close to 100 years after the Sixth Amendment was penned. Okay? Now, there may be some place, and we're finding out, there are hints of things starting to come out that why they're demanding that you have a board-certified member of the local bar association in good standing. It appears that it may have something to do with a bankruptcy case in 1933 in which the United States was allegedly the participant filing bankruptcy, and that the corporation that was established in 1917 was now doing business for the aggregate, the United States of America, not the corporation. But, and so what's happening is that they're using statutes and policy, et cetera, that has nothing to do with the original rights that were established for each individual under the Sixth Amendment. And so when if you end up in court and you end up with a situation where the judge says, I'm sorry, you can only have a be represented by an attorney in good standing with the bar, Your Honor, please, where does the term represented appear in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights? I've looked. I cannot find it. And, Your Honor, I'm going to have to object to your statement because it says I have the right to assistance of counsel, and the bar didn't even exist till another 87 years later. So how could the Sixth Amendment be possibly addressing an attorney that's certified by the bar? That, and the American Bar Association prides itself in being just that, an association. It is a social club. It is not a legislated body that has standing or in. Please let us know if there is a law that in this particular state that Mr. T is in, we have not found any law that legislates the practice of law or even provides for the licensing of them. They have a bar card, which is an association card that has nothing to do with anything law related to law, other than amongst the practice of the of attorneys in an effort to maintain their professional income capacity. They mutually respect each other to the exclusion of your rights. And to that end, if you fail to object to those rights vehemently, you are technically by law accepting them. And there's many statutes that directly point out that if in certain in all kinds of different status and application in United States Code, etc., that if somebody makes an assertion and it is not challenged, the assertion is allowed to stand. And therefore, it's you and I that are hanging ourselves. And, you know, if they say, look, Mary Poppins just touched down at the sidewalk at the corner of 5th and Main, and she was crosswalking, and you failed to stop for her. There's a law that states that when Mary Poppins is in the neighborhood, you have to stop and get down on your knees and cross your forehead. And if you do not object to that, and if they say it's a misdemeanor, as bad as it sounds, you may end up getting prosecuted for a misdemeanor. Okay? There's an old saying, you should know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Well, the truth starts with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And even before that, there's the Articles of Confederation that precede those. And some people say, well, there's this law here, this law there. Well, Your Honor, are you saying that this state law or this county law here exceeds my right with the Constitution? And one of the biggest and easiest examples to give is the, Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it exceed my right to keep bear firearm in that school ground or that Luby's Cafe or that church, let alone your courtroom? And to that end, that is an immediate proof that there is law as described under 18 U.S.C. 242 that an individual can deprive you of your rights under and does so regularly. And certain states, they're having a tough time of it right now in some of those states, but some of those states still purvey significant opposition to anybody possessing or owning a gun in their jurisdiction. And it's all unconstitutional, and it's all a felony under 18 U.S.C. 242, a deprivation of rights under color of law, policy, procedure, etc. And the first word that it uses is law. And so what happens is that you have to be prepared and know how to proceed to defend your rights in that situation. I'm going to grab something to drink real quick. Thank you for your patience. And this includes a reasonable background of jurisprudence. Now, a while back, we had a guest speaking on Tuesday evening, and he pointed out that there was a, you know, that the Black's Law Dictionary, there are some challenges with that, but he pointed out that there's a Bouvier's Law Dictionary and Concise Encyclopedia that was made just for that the application of the Constitution in America. And if I can encourage every one of you, there's a especially those of you who have an eBay account, if you can look up onto eBay, there's Bouvier's Law. It has a there's a DVD that you can buy that you can get online through the eBay, and what happens is that it comes from Great Britain of all places. But what I want you to look at is that it says it just says Bouvier's Law, B-O-U-V-I-E-R, apostrophe S, Bouvier's Law, and it's a The gentleman, it was about $7.50 plus $5.50 shipping. It's $13-something. But there's places where you can get a copy of that dictionary for $13.50 U.S. And now I'm going to tell you right now that one particular McDougal Digital that produced that one, he runs out of it regularly. I think he only makes about 50 or 60 at a time, and he runs out of them. And when the and after his eBay store has been out of them for a while, he he reproduces it. You know, he makes more of them. But what I recommend is that along with Black's Law, and they have Black's Law first edition DVDs of the first edition available on eBay. And if you can get at least the Bouvier's Law and the eBay first edition, I hardly recommend it. Okay. Another thing that I hardly recommend is that you visit Amazon, and for those of you who have not heard me suggest this in the past, there's a handful of things that there's a little pocket guide to the Constitution of the United States. The paperback version is $1.98. They've got some other versions there, but what I recommend is that you you get the paperback version and keep it in your pocket, okay? And so what happens is that you'll find out that a lot of very, very good items come to the surface when you're thinking about that. When you're thinking, you pull that out and read it. And please, please, please buy yourself a highlighter so that when you're reading through it, that you can highlight it. There's a couple of other books that are available on Amazon that I humbly recommend that you buy. And it's, even though you may not be embroiled in a court case now, the chances of ending up in one, for most people, it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. And to that end, there's Making and Meeting Objections to by Judge Robert Wanky, and it's about $35 or $40. And then there's a Understanding Trial Objections by Ryan Steiger, and that's about $15 or $20 also. And if you have, say, $40 or $45 right now that burning a hole in your pocket, or may not even be burning a hole in your pocket, but the Constitution of the United States, it's $1.98. It's just under $2. Making and Meeting Objections to by Judge Robert Wanky, and Understanding Trial Objections by Ryan Steiger. Those three, I hardly recommend that you buy those. And you start reading them, first time you read through, especially the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence, when you read through it like it's a paperback novel or something. Don't try to study it too hard. And the second time you read through it, try to plan on sitting down for, less than an hour or two, and just read through from front to back on it, okay? And I say an hour or two to make a very, very specific point. What I want you to do is not dig into it the first couple times, okay? What I want you to do is go over it and read to the – what happens is that you get generally familiar with the overall of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Now, the last time I read through the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in one sitting, was over a week ago. Now, if that doesn't tell you something, I may have some teeny weeny bit of background, and I may understand and remember a little bit of it, and I'll tell you something. Every time I read through it, I learn more. Some of you, a couple weeks ago, when I initially asked you to that if you were able to call or email or text Michael so that he could get a copy of the 8 U.S.C. 1502, he also was sending out a copy of the Constitution that had some highlights in it. If you got that thing that had those highlights in it, that's one of many copies that I have that I keep, and I update regularly, and those different colors mean a lot. And it's very, very important, you know, some of those ones that are highlighted, to be not just generally, but as very familiar, with those. The thing is that when you come to the Sixth Amendment, you'll see that, the last half of it is highlighted. And, Michael is completely, able to, and, available to send you another copy if you choose to and you'd like to receive it. Yeah, those are email and they're free and you don't have to pay a whole bunch of money for them, okay? But, those two documents, very, very important. Now, real quick, I'm going to ask again, do we have anybody that did any, new additional research, on 8 U.S.C. 1502? Could you please raise your hands on the, Michael, what is that, star two?
Star two on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, star two on your keypad. Raise your hands. Feel free to raise your hands at any time because that is something that I want to continue to go over, and I'd like to go over regularly. And we want to take that one and polish it up and polish it off. Oh, by the way, that little pocket $1.99 Constitution, may I humbly suggest that, if you can possibly afford it, go ahead and buy 20 or 100 copies of it, and don't just keep one for yourself. But hand them out to friends, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And the more that these individuals and your fellow person have this knowledge, and maybe even have one of these in their pockets, the more you have standing beside you and with you, if a topic comes up, or all of a sudden you're at an evening dinner gathering, and there's a knock on the front door, and a couple of uniforms with badges come in, and they want to talk to you. And it gives you the capacity to not only to address any concerns that they may be raising, but at the same time, your friends will be there to support you. I was present not too long ago. It was back in March. I was in Florida when it happened. I was at a doctor's office there. And a couple of constabulary showed up in the parking lot of the doctor's office and wanted to go search the gentleman's car. And I asked him, I said, and I was in a wheelchair, and, there were other people watching, and no cop wants to be seen as beating up some old dusty old fart in a wheelchair in front of everybody for, that's not brandishing a weapon or something. But I asked him, I says, you have a warrant for this gentleman's car? And one of them says, we don't need a warrant. He says, we have probable cause. And I says, so you've got a warrant coming then? He says, what do you mean? We got one coming. He says, and I quoted the Fourth Amendment, and he looks at me and he goes, who are you? I says, I'm nobody of consequence. But correct me if I'm wrong. It says that no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath of affirmation describing, particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. Now, do you have one of those warrants? And all of a sudden, all eight of the people that were standing out there, and some of these, two of these guys were leaning on Ferraris. So all this, you know, so you know that they had to be somebody of note. And these two officers are, he says, buddy, do I have to arrest you? And I says, well, do you have probable cause? And, was a crime committed in your hearing? He says, mister, I'll take your ICE to jail and let you work it out with the judge. And, you know, and I says, did everybody hear that? He says, they're not gonna. And one of the guys, all of a sudden, he says, yeah, I am going to. He says, you're gonna do what? He says, right now, he asked you if you had a warrant for it. He says, this is none of his business. This is Cherokee police business. I says, excuse me. And he goes, look, buddy, you do what we tell you or else I'll take your ass to jail. And I says, this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And the people don't have time, aren't able to, aren't capable of doing something or can't afford to, they hire help. And, you know, governors, presidents, judges, police officers, longshoremen. And to that end, oh, by the way, those first three, they were not just hired help, they're temp help. But to that end, they all of those report to the people. And those inalienable rights that were given to, that were reserved for the people, were never surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. And the only reason you have the authority to arrest is because the people give it to you, and we are the people. And by this time, three of the people were holding up their phones and recording it. And I says, do you have a warrant? And have, or are you using your probable cause to get one? He says, what is that crap again? I says, well, you got a smartphone on your belt there. Why don't you pull up the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution? And he read it to his buddy. He says, he's right. He says, but we've got probable cause. We saw it. And he says, nope, he's right. We have to get a warrant, you know. And all of a sudden, the guy went from being very defensive. And I says, and his partner looked at me. He says, you lying little sheet. And I says, excuse me, I didn't know you spoke French. And he goes, but all of these people know you don't. And they're very clear on the concept that you're about, or you are coloring outside the lines right now. And I asked him, I says, how many of you are ready to sign a complaint against these two officers? And one guy says, no, I'll get a warrant. And the other guy says, you know, I says, against that one officer. He goes, okay, we don't have a warrant. He says, but we got probable cause. And all of a sudden he says, so how are we supposed to handle this? Well, if you would like to search this gentleman, you get on the phone, you call your watch commander, you get the judge to do a three-way call with you, or use your, because you've got the Apple phone here, you can do a Zoom call with the judge, or you can do a face call, and he says, and you can propound your probable cause and tell him what your probable cause is, and tell him what you're looking for and what you're looking to seize. And the guy goes, well, and all of a sudden he goes, shit, mister, who the fork are you? I says, I'm nobody of consequence, but the Constitution is, and the Bill of Rights is something to, of substance. And you, actually, you know what? I'm one of the people you were hired to protect and serve. That's who I am. And I don't need a name, but you're one of the people, I'm one of the people that you're hired to protect and serve. So to that end, we'd prefer not to have the hired help, creating insurrection against its employers. He unsnapped his holster and got his hand firmly gripped on it. And this old fart in the, one of the two Ferraris that were there says, mister, take your hand off your gun and re-snap that. He says, or I will be talking to the chief of police. And if you look, he's on my speed dial. He's a personal friend. And the guy goes, who the fork are you? He says, one more time you say that, and I'm just going to dial the chief of police out of principle. He says, and you can ask yourself how long you think you'll work in this town again, because you don't know who we are. You know, and to make the point, the people that you stand with, the people you educate that are around you, turns out that 2 years earlier when I was at that doctor's place, I left him a bundle of a different type of, and it says American jurisprudence and the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And they were a little pocket guide. This guy picked up four of them, and he still had one of the ones that I had left in his pocket. So however you want to slice and dice it, wherever you go, always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have, and always be prepared to educate not just your fellow person, but potentially the adversary or the person that would start out as your adversary. And that one, it finished up, I says, well, you both gentlemen understand that now you need a warrant before you can search a vehicle. And they both said yes. And he says, were you really going to try to call a watch commander? I says, no. I have your prosecutor's phone number on my speed dial. I wasn't going to bother with your watch commander. You know, you're committing. You would have been committing a felony. And one of them said, holy shaving cream, that man. Well, he used literal. And he says, so you were going to have us arrested? Who is going to arrest me in this town? I says, not one, but two federal marshals. He says, feds. I says, look up 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242 real quick. I says, you look up 241, you look up 18 U.S.C. 242, and they both looked them up. And it was holy shaving cream, Batman. And they looked at each other, and he says, so, and he come over and looked at my phone, and he says, he's got his number on speed dial. And it was a complete incident and an accident that I had that prosecutor's phone number on speed dial. I was working on something that was completely unrelated, and this guy got involved, and I happened to be out in Florida for some meetings. He asked me to get back to him on giving him some little cards that says, where in the Constitution does it exclude my right to keep and bear a firearm in that school ground, let alone your courtroom? And on the backside, it had 18 U.S.C. 242 on it. You know, and he asked me to, you know, get back to him. He wanted a couple dozen of those cards. I sent him a box of 500. but it's weird how things can go around, and what comes around, what goes around. And if you attempt to try to be prepared, the chance of you coming out on top are much, much better. Right now, the Sixth Amendment, okay, we have two lessons for the day. Number one, please, 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 anybody, when you get a chance this week, if you don't already have a copy of it, get a copy of 8 U.S.C. 1502 and call the U.S. State Department and just say, hey, I have need of getting a certificate of nationality. Who do I talk to? Is that something you can help me with? Use those words, okay? Then two, whenever somebody says that you can't represent yourself, or you can't, you're not, the Constitution says you have to have an attorney, especially if it's a judge, ask the judge, where in the Constitution is it we use the word represent? And remind them that it was 87 years later that the American Bar Association was founded. Look up, and there's a place in, and if you want, Michael has a little three-line or four-line email that covers the Sixth Amendment and when the American Bar Association was founded. And if you want to, send Michael a a text or an email, ask him if he can send that to you. And it was coincidentally one that we used with Mr. T, and we resent him today. It's been sent around a couple times, but ask him for those so that you have those ready and that you are prepared. With that, my time has come to close. It's truly an honor and privilege to serve Liberty, Lady Liberty, and my fellow Americans beside all of you. We're now going to open up the question and answers. You're not required to refrain to the subject matter topic. If you can, that would be wonderful. Anybody has any questions on 8 U.S.C. 1502, we'd love to entertain those right now. And with that, back to you, Martin and Michael.
Well, thank you so very much, sir. Thank you. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hands. Press star 2. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll see in the center right of your monitor the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click inside of that rectangle. Type away your comment or question. Underneath the rectangle, you'll see a place to put your name, some other information, then hit submit. When you hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I will be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. Starting us off this evening is Jennifer Sue, followed by Charlie, and then Brent, and then Duncan so far. Go ahead, Miss Jennifer Sue.
Jennifer Sue from New York. How are you doing, girl?
I am pretty good, and how are you doing?
Hey, I have had a meat grinder of a day, but I'm doing better than I deserve, and I'm doing better than a mortal human being should be morally allowed to be. And that includes the fact that I had a minor surgery on my back today, and I only got out of surgery less than 4 hours ago.
Well, that must mean you're just not a mortal man, you're a superman. I'm sorry to say.
No, that means I'm in so much pain that I'm waiting to get done with this call so I can take that prescription that they gave me for pain.
Got the extra Percocet.
Take it now.
Yeah, really. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome away. Here it comes.
That's why you're a Superman. Anyway, just a quick note. I had sent letters before you even asked us to send, you know, call the Department of State. I had sent letters to the DMV, and my license ran out, and I went down to my local DMV, and she had received my letter and had investigated and called Albany DMV head, you know, department. And, you know, she said, well, you know, driving is a privilege, and, you know, you have to have a license. And I said, well, no, only if U.S. citizen does. And see, this on this document here, it says I can only apply for a license if I'm a U.S. citizen. And I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm American national, so I have a right to drive. And anyway, what she found out was that I can call the diplomatic department, and they would be able to help me in Albany. And I haven't had a chance to do that yet, but I will be doing that this week. On top of, I still haven't sent a letter to the State Department asking them to, you know, send letters to all those departments, to all those different issues. But I just thought I'd update you that the DMV actually told me that I can get a diplomatic license that would be okay. And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Yeah, there are two people here in Texas that for over 20 years they've driven on a diplomatic plate. It was something similar to we didn't use the term revising your status back then. It was, or correcting your status. It was, we used the term at that juncture, this is when the internet and everything was just starting to get going. But they we had one that says accepting your diplomatic status, and that was the program back then. And there are two of those individuals that I saw, one of them about 6 months or a year ago, and she's her husband has since passed away, and she's still driving the car that has counselor plates on it. It and they never need to be renewed is another thing. Mm. Also, by the way, those five screenshots you sent to me today, they are so small that I cannot read them, and I have not been able to take them out of the email to enlarge them. Could you resend those that five screenshots that you shot me today? Okay. And can you make them as attachments, not embedded in the did you send this from your phone?
No, I sent it from the computer, and I thought maybe because they're PNG and not JPEG or PDF, maybe that's why, because I thought they were an attachment. And so I'll just try it again, though. I'll change the...
Yeah, if you can change them to, like, a PDF or something, or a JPEG,
right,
and then shoot them to me as an attachment, I would very, very much appreciate that, okay? As it sounds, I was in the prep for OR, and they let me keep my laptop, and so that's when I got it. You know? So it can't be said that when I go in for surgery that I just lay on my butt, you know.
I just want to let people know the reason I want to have some type of license is because I can't even get anything notarized or do a lot of things without a picture ID with my address, with my, sorry, post location and a signature. And so basically you can't do anything without some sort of ID like that, but I don't want to get a regular U.S. citizen license. And so that's why I'm attempting to get something similar that is better.
Jennifer,
even though we shouldn't need anything.
Refresh my memory. Have you corrected your status?
I definitely have.
Okay. Then you also have your passport card, correct?
Yes.
You have your passport and your passport card, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
But they don't have my post location or my signature. They only have a picture of me.
May I offer something to support that to maybe solve your problem?
Okay.
If you keep a copy of a utility bill with you, or if you have a landline phone number, anything like that, keep a copy of an electric bill with you, and keep, try to keep a photocopy of something recent, or even the one that you got that you didn't, you tore off the tab, and you sent in the tab with the check, but you didn't throw away the rest of the electric bill. Keep that with you, because with that,
I've tried that, but it doesn't have my signature or photo. They want this one item that has all three things. Everywhere I've gone.
Now, most notaries don't require that. And you know it's not a state law. The notary can sign, check the box known to me personally, and that's all they have to do. So if you have a notary that was resistive, I'm just talking about stopgap measures until we get you your ID.
I also mean if I have to file paperwork for the court, they won't accept anything else.
Then here's what you ask them. You're saying that somebody who doesn't drive has no rights to file anything and doesn't travel internationally?
New York State has a card that if you're a non-driver, it will give you all of that on a card, and it will say you're a non-driver, but I'm not a non-driver either. I've looked into it all.
Yeah, it sounds like you have. Okay. By the way, it looks like you just sent the first one of those screenshots over. That I can read, but I'm having trouble saving it. It won't let me save it as a Well, hold on. Just let me save it as a picture. Okay. So I'm going to put that into your file as a picture. Okay. That's okay. We may be able to work with that. Okay.
I'll still try and save them as PDFs and send them to you. I'm not in front. You know, once the call's over, I will do that.
Okay. Thank you, girl. I really appreciate you. You bless my heart. With that, have we covered what you wanted to cover for the moment?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, girl. You take care and have a wonderful evening.
And you too. Hope to get your pain meds into that mouth of yours very soon.
Well, yeah, my son got home from the pharmacy less than 20 minutes ago, and they are sitting right across from me right now.
They're calling my name. John, we have 7 other people in line here, so let's go ahead.
Yeah, back to you, Michael.
Okay,
thank you kindly. Charlie, you're up next. Go ahead.
Yeah, Charlie, can you hear me?
There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. You bet. Brief questions. Let's see. Spell again. I couldn't write as fast or type as fast as you spelled. Beaubier.
Yes, how sir. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. B-O-U.
Okay.
B-I-E-R.
B-I-E-R, apostrophe
S. B-O-U-V-I-E-R, apostrophe S. Beauvais Law. And, okay. You know what? There's multiple vendors that have it on the internet. There's quite a few. Just get any one of them. The one that I had pointed out, he's somebody, in fact, I'm going to look him up right now. Hold on, while we're talking. Because his is a good one. It comes on a DVD, and hold on, I'm opening up a screen to. It comes on a DVD, and a lot of folks. And in fact, I just recently a couple weeks ago ordered some more of them, and he's across the pond. He's in Great Britain. Actually, he's in Edinburgh, in the UK, and he does not waste time shipping out. Most of the time that I've gotten from him, it's been maybe, a week to 10 days for across the pond. Now I will tell you one thing. He's never, ever, ever filled in the shipping data on an eBay purchase to me, and I've never been able to get him to do that. But let's see here. McDewey Digital, here he is. Yes. Oh, at the moment he is. It says out of stock, and he only prints up about 50 or 60 days at a time, and then you know it takes a little bit. Then he's You know what? I would click on contact seller and just ask him if he's preparing to make any more of these. If it would please you, you can reach out to Michael, and I'm going to I'm gonna send him a link so that you Michael, this should be it should get to you really quick here. I'm sending a link on the Bouvier's Law, and so when you the moment you get that, I tell you what, wow, it already sent. Michael should have that any moment, and if you want to reach out to Michael, he'll have a link that you can request 8 U.S.C. 1502 and request a link of that constitutional also. Okay.
Yeah.
Charlie.
He sent those to me, and I looked up the 1802, so I grabbed that online.
Oh, okay. You already did that. You the man.
I didn't get a chance to call today, but trying to figure out what to ask and that sort of thing. Now, you mentioned, I did find on Amazon, Making and Meeting Objections 2, and I see the author there. You mentioned another book, Understanding Trial Judgments. Is that the correct title?
Understanding Trial Objections. Okay.
Objections.
It's not very expensive, but I think it's like $15 or $20. But it's Understanding Trial Objections by Ryan Steiger, and he spells his name very, very funny. And if I remember right, it's like Stygar. But Understanding Trial Objections by Ryan Steiger.
Okay. All right. And I'll look that up.
Okay. Is there anything else I can do to be an answer or blessing for you, my honored brother?
Yes. Regarding Black's Law, you mentioned first edition. Is that preferred? Or, I mean, if a person had a different edition, what advantage, disadvantage, desire, can you speak to that?
Right now, the first edition has the best definitions in it, but more so, this is the word usage that they were using when the Constitution was penned. And unlike Bouvier's Law, which was adapted to the Constitution, the laws of the United States and of the several states of the Union, Black's Law Dictionary 1, or edition number 1, is the closest. Just think about it. What's the logic in it? It's the closest one to the vernacular and the term usage that they were using when our Constitution was penned and the original Founding Fathers, the laws that they penned. So wouldn't it just seem logical that it might be wise to go with that one and not with the definition of, and they're up past 9 and 10th now, editions. But wouldn't it be better to use the definition that our founding forefathers were using? And if a judge says, no, this is what Black's Law, I got it right here. Your Honor, here, that's the 10th edition I see that you got there. This one, these words, I'm using the edition that was being used at the time our founding forefathers penned that. So we're going to get the definition that they were using and penning with that language. You see where we're going with the pond we're fishing in that?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank
now,
you.
If you have a problem getting the Bouvier's Law dictionary, from eBay there with that link. Because you're on Amazon, there's a Bouvier's Law Dictionary Volume 1 that is available for about $25. Okay. And it's a paperback. The one that I told you about is a digital. It's on a DVD. And the nice thing about this one is that, when I look it up, I can put it on any, computer that I have or any, electronic device. And that's the other reason why, I recommend that. Now, when you go to Amazon, there's a, Bouvier's, Law Dictionary and Encyclopedia that there's actually editions 1, 2 and volume 1 and volume 2 that are both about $25. If you can't get the digital off of eBay, go ahead and get the two $25 specials. And if you've got the nickels, from time to time they have available the quote unquote Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 3 volumes, it's the 3rd revision of the 8th edition, and I'm just looking it up right. Whoa, it's unavailable right now. Ooh, ouch. That there's a couple of different large. Bound editions of Bouvier's Law on Amazon. I recommend if you can get the electronic one from McDewey Digital, absolutely. It's easy to carry around and you can carry it, you can transfer it to your tablet or your laptop. And remember, Bouvier's Law was adapted for the Constitution of the United States. Okay.
Okay. Okay. And I might just mention one other thing. Last week you were addressing Constitution for versus Constitution of, and I presume you might be familiar with and would know if David Barton. Do you know that name, David Barton?
I know the name. I do not know the individual.
Okay. Reportedly has maybe the largest personal collection of
here in Texas.
No, artifacts. Say it again.
Yeah, he's here in Texas, isn't he?
He is. He is. And I've seen a video of people at his library. You know, there's a lot of stuff there. Anyway, I just wonder if he has the Constitution that you... that was burned, you know.
Now, let me ask you a question. When was the Corporation for the Constitution established? What year? Do you remember?
No, I haven't. This is kind of new stuff to me. Corporation Constitution. I'm going to guess here. Let's see. So, I don't know. Was that 1871 then?
I don't know. No, the corporation. Corporation for the United States of America.
It'd be a guess. Corporation of the United States. Why don't I say I don't know, so I don't waste time.
okay. Now, 1917. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Now, so any copy of the Constitution that predates 1917, that wouldn't have anything to do with the corporation, would it?
True.
Very good. So now you know how to discern whether something could possibly be the original and real versus the Constitution for the corporation.
Okay. Okay. And I...
Or did I miss something? I was never very
nope.
bright.
What I was going to mention, you had no longer have the copies that you had. And I didn't know.
We had two that still had the wax seal on them that were still sealed. The seal had never been broken. I had one that did have the wax seal broken to show people that this is what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. The point that I was just bringing up, I assume you have, I don't know, but I assume you have access to the original Constitution. If you did not, that's why I brought the name David Martin.
Yeah. Actually, I'm negotiating with somebody that still says they have a wax sealed copy up in Minnesota.
Okay.
And he's a great grandson of, he's my, it's like, eighth cousin twice removed. He's the descendant of the nephew of my great, great, great grandfather. Before he passed, he's the one that obtained those original copies. And he apparently obtained, he was there for like 3 weeks while they, got the copies for him. And had the copies reproduced.
Mm.
But he's the one that got those. Okay, is that,
that covers
Meyer,
it.
Brother?
Yep, it
thank
is.
You.
And thank you
thank
for
you,
the 1917.
Thank you,
yep, thanks. Thank you for the info.
You
appreciate
have a wonderful
you.
Evening. Back to you, thank Martin you. And Michael, sir.
All right. Next is, Brent, followed by Duncan, followed by Doug, followed by Armenta. Go ahead, Brent.
Is this Brent from Arizona?
Yeah, Brent from Arizona.
On his
that?
Knee.
How are you
Brent
doing,
from Arizona,
brother?
Good, good. How are you doing, brother? I'm actually in New York.
Better than a mortal human being should be morally allowed to be.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you're hoping for some pain meds. But anyways, I'll be quick. I just want to kind of piggyback on Jennifer's question there. I'm having a really hard time opening up a bank account, and I'll get back to 8 U.S.C. 1502 in just a minute. But this ID thing that she talked about, the property is held by the corporation soul and the charitable religious trust. So my name's not on property. I don't have any bills because I'm out in the boondocks. All I have is a cell phone. All my mail goes to a post office box. And with a Know Your Customer, I can't open up a bank account for any of the organizations because they still need to get any signer that's on the account. They need to get their social security number and they need to get their proof of address and, you know, ID like she was talking about. And I'm just really struggling with that. It's like I can't be a signer on my own corporation full bank account. And I've used my passport card, all that kind of stuff. And it works for the picture ID and the identification and all that kind of stuff, but they need the address. And I don't know how to get around that. Any ideas?
Now, normally this would be a Justice Breshears question, okay? And but
Right. I'm only asking it because it was brought up.
Okay. What name is the electric bill in?
There's no electric.
Is it in the... Okay, do you have any utilities at all?
No.
So you're producing your own energy out there and your own water?
You know it.
Sick 'em doggy, Brent. You
I
rock.
I am a free man.
Yeah, you totally rock. Okay, now, do you still have a VRC, a voter registration card?
I don't think
so. You better. As an American national, you still have the right to vote.
I thought they took you off the voter rolls.
Oh, they try to, but they can't, not legally. And off the record, I'm not me, I'm some other guy, I'm from the Bronx, and you didn't hear this. But we have had some people, some jurisdictions take individuals off the voter rolls saying, you know, you're not an American or US citizen, you can't vote. And we may have used that to our advantage on a couple of students' cases. But you, by the Constitution, have the right to vote, okay? And, Brent, may I humbly recommend that if you don't have a copy of the Constitution handy, ask Michael to send out the one that's got the highlights to you. In fact, Michael, send out a 8 U.S.C. 1502 and a Constitution out to Brent from Arizona, please. And, by the way, I want to talk to our young charge tomorrow, if that's all possible. So ask him to give me a call in the morning if he's able to.
I will. I will.
Good. Okay.
And
but
I always have my
voter registration card. Go ahead.
I always have my Constitution within a couple feet of me, and it's in my hand right now. I actually found my voter registration card, and yeah, I think that might actually work. It has a physical address on there, so.
Yep, the VRC has to.
Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm I worked for how many years as an election judge and or as a poll watcher. So, and when it comes to being at the poll, if somebody's going to go to jail, it's me that sends them there.
Okay. So moving on, because there's lots of people in line.
Okay.
8 U.S.C. 1502, it says the certificate of nationality shall be solely for use in the case for which it was issued and shall be transmitted by Secretary of State through appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state in which it is to be used. So how can we just call them up or contact them and ask them for one when it has to go through official channels and has to be for a specific purpose?
Yep. Okay. Good question. I know where you're going with this. How do I get a copy of that?
Well, we're going to be doing this, seeking this for our young charge. What you're going to do, Brent, is you're going to call, you know, you or him is going to call, the State Department. At that 800 number, and you're going to say, hey, look, I am currently in need of copy of the certificate of nationality, and I need it sent to this jurisdiction, to this judge, is this something you can help me with, or do I is there somebody else I can speak to? And just ask them that. And then when you get to the person that's going to issue it, ask them, okay, for my own reference, may I please get a copy of that sent to me, the copy of what you're sending to them through channels, okay? So what you do is you ask them just to send you a courtesy copy of what they're sending to that judge, okay?
Okay.
And when they do that, that way you can have a copy that you can use for anything else, and it's all legal, and you can say, hey, look, this is actually what was happening in an active situation, and this is what was used. So
you can verify the validity with that judge or that prosecutor.
Okay.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Is that everything, Brent?
Yeah, that's all I had. Just two questions.
Thank you. Back to you, Martin and Michael.
Thank you, and God bless.
And to you as well, my honored brother. Okay, Martin, Michael, you there?
If I'd only learned to unmute my phone, I'm sitting here telling Duncan to unmute his phone. He can't hear me.
I was just about to brag on everybody and rub you a little raw with some rutabaga here about talking and not having your phone off of mute.
I'm here. Thank you.
Okay. Request lines are open. Next caller, please.
I'm here. This is Duncan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Duncan. If you could talk a little louder, that would be very helpful.
Sure. Thank you. Question. When you were talking about them needing to have a search warrant to search the vehicle, did that information come from the Fourth Amendment you were citing, I believe?
Well, Duncan, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked. How about if we read the Fourth Amendment? It's a very long one. It may take almost half a minute. You ready?
Yes, thank you.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects against unreasonable search and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. Ooh, there's that word probable cause, supported by an oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons and things to be seized. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's talking about, it enumerated about everything you possibly can or in that day could. So you think that applies to automobiles?
It sounds like it to me. They have to be specific when they.
I and many other students of law and the technology of law and jurisprudence would agree with you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome. An honor and privilege. Okay. Back to you, Martin and Michael. Request lines are open. Next caller, please.
Well, I just checked to make sure that I'm not muted. That works. Next is Doug.
What a novel
followed
concept.
By Armenta.
Okay, who we got? Who are we bringing on now?
We have Doug. That's the gentleman that you spoke with earlier today regarding corporation soul and trust and so forth.
Good evening, Doug. How are you? How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much.
Okay.
How is everything up in Michigan there?
That's actually fairly warm, surprisingly.
You live in Michigan, right?
Yeah.
By the way, I got, literally while we've been talking, I've been receiving all the fan mail from Justice Breshears on your CS and CRTs, on your corpus soul and your charitable religious trust. So Justice Breshears has been burning up. I've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 emails just working with you in the last hour and a half. They've all been arriving since, the earliest one arrived at 8:08 p.m. Central Time, my time, and the last one arrived at 8:35 p.m., so a little over an hour ago.
Oh, okay.
So he's,
well, I've been sending them to Michael, too.
Yeah, well, and he's been a patient man, considering that Langley's probably opening every one of them. How may I be an asset or blessing for you, Doug, tonight?
Okay, I got a question on the appointment of trust agent. So if I sign that, put your name down, and then I get that notarized just with me, you don't have to have it, your signature notarized?
Well, what you will do is you will send that to me, and there's a portion on that that says acceptance of trust agent. On the, you see the bottom there? Have you opened that document all the way?
I did, and I think I took that off because that was
okay.
The way I did it before, it got notarized and both of us were there.
Some banks require an acceptance of trust agent. Some courts require that it was accepted. So I would go ahead and leave that attached. And you'll need to, what I would like you to do is do duplicate originals. And I would like you to keep one, and then, you're going to keep one eventually, but you're going to execute and notarize both of them and then send them to me. And if you need to, I'll send you a priority mail shipping label, and you can put it in a regular priority mail envelope and just put the shipping label on it, and it'll come to me, and then I'll execute and get it notarized here and send you one back.
Okay.
So that you and I will have
that.
We'll both have executed notarized originals, okay?
Yeah. Are you going to need that tomorrow?
No. The thing for tomorrow is that letter that I'm just about done with. You're going to take that letter in the morning. And now I need you to send me the a photo of the certified return receipt requested green sticker that has the numbers on it. Were you able to get one yet, or you need to do that in the morning?
No, because they were closed.
Okay. Usually the foyer is open, even though the office is closed. And usually in the foyer, or the atrium, they have those. And so the moment you get that to me, I'm going to have you already forwarded to Mr. Edwards the exemplars as he described them?
Yeah, you already have them, John. He sent two exemplars, and what I was going to say is Doug, you need to go to a box store.
Cover that on a separate call, please.
The reason I was going to cover it on this call is because there are many people on this call that either soon or later are going to be talking to you about, having you do some work for them, and they're going to need to hear this But we can do it later if you want. I don't care.
That would I prefer that let's keep that's just a regular housekeeping item.
You want to get to your drugs as quick as you can. And that's what you're saying.
Nothing I'll admit to in public.
Were you a child of the 60s?
I hate it when your friends confess your sins like this. You know, your friends are supposed to be there supporting you and caring for you and standing behind you. I hate it. You know what's even worse than, friends confessing your sins for you? It's when your children or your wife confesses your sins for you. Oh, man, that's bad. Okay. Doug, was there any other questions? I tell you what, Doug, after we get done with the conference call, call Michael immediately, and let's have a quick follow-up afterward, okay?
Okay.
And we'll cover all those remaining issues then, okay?
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Is there anything else you'd like to ask on the call?
No. We'll get it quick.
Okay.
And get your pills.
Okay. With that, back to you, Martin and Michael. Request line.
All right,
next
Armenta, your line is open. Go ahead.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. How are you?
Fantastic.
Doing very, very well.
Great. So,
in spite of how much fun we may really be having.
I actually have a kind of a age-old question about something that has recently occurred with me. Now, earlier this evening, you had spoke about how it's not if you'll ever have court situations. It's the question is when. So what I had just occurred is that, well, I guess some years ago, I had a judgment placed on me by a third-party collections agency.
Okay.
And I ended up, I didn't pay it, but fast forward about a week ago, the funds, they ended up garnishing funds from my mother's account for that judgment, which that bank account had my name on it because she put my name on her account in case something happened to her. But the garnishment didn't come necessarily directly from this collection agency. It came from the county court. So they're all in cahoots together. So my question is there a way that I can go back and remedy this? Do I need to do the 8 U.S.C. 1502?
Okay. Now, they went into your bank, and were you presented with a garnishment or judgment before that?
I wasn't presented with – I had the judgment done some years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, but I never was presented with any kind of garnishment paperwork.
Okay. And was this related to a credit card, or what was it related to?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to need to see the paperwork to be able to help you on that one.
Okay.
Is there a way that you can schedule an appointment, you know, call Michael up tomorrow and schedule an appointment, a phone appointment so that we can chat about this? And when you, and before you call, well, or if you have Michael's email address, send it to Michael if you can in advance. When you call up to schedule the appointment, get his email address if you don't already have it, and send all that stuff in advance of the appointment. And send copies of everything, okay, that you've got on this. And how much are we talking about? $1,000, $10,000?
$6,000.
Okay.
$6,099.
Did they do a garnishment for the full amount?
They sure did.
Okay. Let's call Michael up, schedule an appointment, send him copies of everything so that he can forward that to me and get it prepared in advance before we have our phone call, okay?
Okay.
Look forward to our phone call.
Okay.
There anything else?
Thank you.
Is there anything else I can do for you this evening?
Let's see. I think I had a question about the 15 USC, but it was answered in some of the other folks' questions tonight. So think that was it. Yes, I appreciate it.
And I pray the Father's blessings be upon you and bid you good evening. Thank you. Take care, girl.
Thank you. God bless you as well.
Back to you, Martin and Michael. Request lines are open. Next caller, please.
I think we've about hit rock bottom on this. Again, one more time, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand, press star 2. While we're thinking about that, we'll go over to Freedoms Radio and check that real quick. I'm going to refresh. If you are new to Freedoms Radio, you're listening through the link there. You'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click into that rectangle. Type away your comment or question. Underneath that silhouette of a rectangle, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information. Then hit submit. It'll pop up on my end, and I will be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. John, I don't see anyone else who has raised their hands, so I think it's a good night.
Well,
I want to remind you. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say thank you one and all for the honor and the privilege of allowing me to serve the Most High King by serving you, and allowing me to serve my fellow person by serving you and serving America and restoring liberty to America. Thank you.
I'm an honor.
Thank you, Michael.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Tomorrow night, we'll return with Mr. Slevin. Herr Slevin will be sharing with us his most unique LLC, a limited liability company, that by the way that it had been arranged in its organization in such a way that it doesn't have a tax liability. And just to give you a heads up, John has acquired them. I've acquired one of them. And they are super for either workers or employees or entrepreneurs. If you're an entrepreneur, of course, the benefit has already announced itself to you from what I've said. If you're an employee is a federal citizen, and a worker is just an American national or just someone who's a union state citizen. And by operating through this LLC where you currently work, you're able to remove the taxes being taken out of your paycheck. And you're able to then operate as a worker for this LLC with 100% of your labor being compensated. So then, until tomorrow night, good night, everyone. Thank you, John, and be well.
And we're looking for Doug to call you and I back immediately.
Right.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.